Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. I'm Ron Edwards, and this is the Don and Ron program coming to you from our studios in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Beautiful weather for late March here in our beloved Shangri-La, if you will. Temperatures in the low 50s. That's really a great feeling for us Minnesotans, if you will. So much going on in the United States, so much going on in the world, in fact, and we'll be taking a look at a multiplicity of issues and et cetera on this evening, Wednesday evening program, if you will. My co-host, Mr. Donald Allen, will not be with us tonight. He has other obligations and commitments. Consequently, our phone lines will not be open, though you are certainly free to text me a specific question or message that you may have. This is particularly for our listeners domestically and internationally, if you will. We've received a number of reflections over the last number of weeks from outside of the United States, raising some questions about some of the questions and issues we've had posed to us here at the Don and Ron program, if you will. This last week, well, of course, the first almost 100 days has been tough for the Donald, if you will. America's 45th president, if you will, a man who said that he was going to make change within hours after his inauguration on the 20th day of January in the year of our Lord, 2017. He's had some real difficulties. Of course, the most severest is the quote-unquote failure to be able to get through the House of Representatives the American health care bill, if you will, formally referred to in a kind of ugly way as the Obama plan, though that's not how it is shown in the legislation, a copy of which will always be preserved in the Library of Congress for those that want to authenticate, attest to, and verify, and et cetera. Whatever you may want to call it, Republican care, Trump care, Donald care, well, you know, it failed. In fact, they didn't even vote on it. A lot of discussion going on within the right, if you will, conservative America, the Republican Party. A lot of Americans unhappy with the inability of the Donald to get this health care plan repealed, if you will, and to forever wipe the name of Barack Obama from the halls of, quote-unquote, the presidents that have served these United States of America. In fact, one of the things that we'll be touching on in tonight's program as we move through a number of observations, narratives, and et cetera about the relationship with Mother Russia is how we have really, well, not we, we understand it's an African American, that there will be not much of a role for Black America in the Trump administration. In fact, you really see it when they do those photo ops in the president's Oval Office or when he goes over to one of the departments like the Energy Department, the Health Department, if you will, the DOJ, Department of Justice, and et cetera. There's a certain whiteness that you see. I do notice that there is periodically a couple of things, such as in the case of Judge Gorsuch. I kept wondering who that young sister, very attractive sister, was that continued to sit in the aisle chair right behind him, first row, if you will, over his left shoulder, if you will. And I wondered if that was one of his law clerks, if you will. Sitting right across from her was his wife, if you will, who Judge Gorsuch showed so much affection for. They hugged and kissed numerous times. But it was the young sister that I watched during this hearing. And I always like to watch a person's eyes. The eyes tell a lot. You know, people can hide a lot with body language, as they like to say, and et cetera. But, man, it's those eyes that, quote, unquote, give you away. In fact, if you have been experienced in interrogation, you will certainly understand that one of the first prerequisites that you are taught is to watch the eyes. Even while you are, you know, creating the worst of circumstances for a person that's being interrogated. In this case, of course, that wasn't what was happening. But the young sister was kind of looking like she was looking at her man. For those of you that take those kinds of programs and et cetera, feel free to go back and take a look. She was there at every hearing, every moment that Judge Gorsuch and his lovely wife, if you will. Now, I thought maybe she was an adopted child, you know what I mean? Don't want to be too ugly. Don't want to be like the conservatives in the manner that they treated the 44th president of the United States, Barack Obama, for 8 years, defaming, humiliating, and insulting his beautiful wife and his two lovely daughters, if you will. And, of course, the kinds of things that they said about Barack Obama, you know, starting with the fact that he was born to a monkey in a grass hut in a place called Kenya. But, you know, we talked about that. On not only this program, I talk about it oftentimes on my television program here in the Twin Cities and touch on it in my column that I write for the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder. But now the rubber has met the road. The Donald, who sold himself like a snake oil salesman as, you know, probably the most proficient, effective bargainer, if you will, borderer, if you will, ever to grace, quote-unquote, the shores of the United States of America, though, you know, his daddy and mother came from Europe. But he wasn't able to get it done. He couldn't get team votes. And, of course, you know, House Speaker Paul Ryan was at least man enough to go to the White House. He didn't sneak there like Kevin Nunes. We'll be talking about him tonight also. The chairman, almost disgraced chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, if you will. Now, here's the thing about good government. If you saw the press conference, and I know many of you did, of the ranking member and the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, you saw two men who clearly wanted to work together, if you will, and not continue to make the United States of America the laughingstock of the free world in any other place, if you will. In fact, our observation here is that Vladimir Putin is a master technician and a planner and a cetera. I mean, not only was he a good spy for the KGB, if you will, I mean, this man is a manipulator. He knows what it is that is necessary to corrupt a government and a people and et cetera, money. And the way that he had spread everything around, and then, you know, he got some pictures. And, you know, when Donald Trump was staying in the Carlton Ritz there in Moscow. Beautiful place. All the boys stayed there. Flynn stayed there. You know, the former campaign manager who now says he had no contact with the Russians. The only one I guess that didn't get there, found out about it right now, I think James Comey, the director of the FBI, knows, and that's our attorney general, old Bilbo Sessions with Alabama. Jeff Sessions, as they call it. I've never seen so many individuals who belong to the hierarchy of government in the history of the United States of America who spent so much time with another foreign power and an adversary of the United States of America than this current crowd that is now everywhere. They're in the White House, they're in the Pentagon, if you will, they're in the Department of Health building, you know, they're in the Department of Commerce, and it looks like the only person, I have to say this, because his name is not even mentioned, he hasn't been in a photo op since the president indicated he was going to make him Secretary of Housing or something like that. And that's the good Dr. Ben Carson, who actually, if they had really been concerned about medicine, they would have made him Secretary of Health, but they didn't want to do that because they actually thought that they were going to push through care, if you will, and certainly they didn't want, you know, they wanted a Caucasian to be recorded and identified in history as on the bow of the super ship, the USS Trump, if you will. Well, you know, that didn't happen. But in the meanwhile, I haven't seen Ben Carson. There's not much. Maybe if one of you out there has seen something on him on CNN or NBC or CBS or, you know, even the Ku Klux Klan's channel, give us a text, you know, because I have not seen. I'm concerned, in fact. I'm not understanding if Ben Carson has, you know, actually taken up residency, you know, as Secretary of Housing, you know, to kind of make sure there's more housing for the beleaguered African-American population of the United States. But I have not seen Ben Carson. But Ben is smart. He's staying out of all controversy. But then maybe it was Ben Carson in the dead of the night, the dark, you know what I mean, that dark and, you know, darkies and things like that. Maybe that's who Nunes met with, somewhere around a bush or a tree there on the on the grounds of the White House, if you will. By the way, on that particular note, as we continue to take a look at almost the first 100 days of Donald Trump, President Trump, the Donald, if you will, is it reminded me of something out of the movie. What was it, The President's Men or whatever? I mean, the movie about Watergate, you know what I mean? And whoever it is, Chairman Nunes of the House Intelligence Committee met with out there in the bushes. I mean, I hope they were meetings to exchange intelligence information, et cetera. You know, you kind of wonder when, you know, late at night, you know, you see, I assume it was another man. It could have been a woman. Or out there, and they're kind of in the bushes under the tree or going into the basement. It makes you kind of wonder. But whoever it was that Chairman Nunes met with, had to be a character called the Deep Throat. And I noticed no one has had the guts to put that label on whoever it was that allegedly met with the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee and allegedly provided he, the chairman, with documentation which supported all of the things that the Donald has said, including obviously the fact that Barack Obama is a traitor, if you will, and has committed felonies and treason and high crimes against the United States of America using the office of President of the United States. In fact, in my column in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder next week, we raise the question, is Obama, President Barack Obama, a felon? And in fact, I'm a little disappointed that we have not had more expression of concern from African Americans and African American leadership in the United States, because it is an ugly thing that the Donald did in defaming a man who served for 8 years as president of these United States and did not have a shred of controversy and allegations of corruption and mismanagement and et cetera leveled against him or anyone really in his administration. I mean, Barack Obama ran a clean ship, a pure ship. In fact, I have to say it was almost as white as Tide. You remember the soap Tide. But on the serious note, Barack Obama did everything he could to make sure that the legacy of the first African-American to become, by the way, African-American born in the United States. You still remember Donald Trump and that birther thing? You know, Donald Trump said some real ugly things about Barack Obama. And I just kind of wonder how much of it was predicated on jealousy. You know, the Donald just didn't like that good-looking African-American gentleman and that beautiful black wife of his And then later, you know, his two beautiful black daughters. I mean, you know, things like that happen, man. Sometimes, you know, people get into a kind of a dark side, if you know what I mean. But I well remember, as a historian, as a commentator, as a journalist, some of the ugly things that Donald Trump and some of his buddies said about the man known as Barack Obama. In fact, they even made fun of his name, that they had never had any person even think about running for president of the United States who had some kind of foreign-sounding name. So the fact of the matter is, presidents, starting with George Washington, had funny-sounding names. I mean, come on, you don't think there were Native Americans running around this continent at the time that, quote-unquote, Eric the Red, and then later, 100 years later, according to white historians, no less than white historians, that that the Pilgrims landed at a place called Plymouth Rock, if you will. I mean, think about it. You know, the first president of the United States of America, his name was Washington, you know. And if someone can, you know, identify for me historically a Native American that was named Washington in 1617, 1615, 1620, 1776, 1780, you know what I'm saying? Because that's how ridiculous these people sounded when they were attacking Barack Obama, that his name was a foreign-sounding name. Well, the fact of the matter is, when many of you white folks came here, you know, every one of you that set foot, and by the way, you know, contrary to the whole myth about Christopher Columbus, that, by the way, that wasn't his real name either, is that Christopher Columbus really did not set foot on anything that represents what is called now the United States of America. He set foot on an island, you know, off the coast of a piece of what was become the United States called Florida, if you will. We get into this because of the vicious nature in which Barack Obama was dealt with and confronted with as the 44th president of the United States of America. But for those in our listening audience, and again, feel free to text me, to give us a call, if you will, and tell me any Native American that you know that had the name Washington or Adams or Jefferson or Madison or Monroe or J.G. Adams, you know, or even Jackson. That would be long enough. Jackson was elected president of these United States, what was it, around 1829, if you will. Now, everything after that were white men that had been born more or less after the Civil War, the Revolutionary War, and then the War of 1812. So we look at all that tonight before we take a look at some local situations going on here. We have a chairman of one of the most important committees in the congressional book, if you will, called the House Intelligence Committee, as I said earlier on this program. When you compare Mr. Schiff and Mr. Nunes, and I feel bad for Adam Schiff. Adam Schiff, who was also out of California, seems to be a man of significant principle and et cetera. But really, you know, Chairman Nunes is really an embarrassment to white America, just as Donald Trump is an embarrassment to white America. Now, those are things that we know that we're not supposed to talk about, if you will. But it's one of the values, if you will, of independence, real independence. And so this commentator on this show does not feel any constraints to speak the truth and to speak the gospel, if you will, because these are on the very, very serious note. Everything that I've said in the first 17 minutes is serious, but you have to have some sense of levity in order to maintain your professional delivery, because in some regards, I'd really like to talk like the boys on the corner. You know what I'm saying? And there are families that have their children listen to this program, and we're very appreciative of that. That's why we try to maintain as much information and et cetera that we can. But there has been such evilness, if you will. There has been such hatred that has been conveyed, all in the name of the preservation of the white race, whatever the heck that's supposed to mean. Again, the last time I looked, the first human being and sighting of a human and fossils and everything else was in a dark place called Dark Africa, right around Tanzania, and up in that area there, you know what I mean? Mount Kilimanjaro and all of that, if you mean. But you have to figure at the same time that was going on. Also, those that were soon to be identified as species called humans, if you will, in places like South America and places like Asia and et cetera. And I assume in the caves of, you know, Northern Europe, there were also people. And by the way, they called themselves everything but white, if you will. You know, the whole thing of white became a part of the American narrative in order to support and justify slavery, if you will, and the nullification and reversal that has become so much a part of this nation. But you need to keep your eye on what is happening with the Intelligence Committee, because it is quite clear the Senate has made a decision, all 100 members of the Senate, which has always considered itself the upper body, if you will, and the more intellectual. Of course, they are also the safest because they are six-year terms. The boys and girls in the House of Representatives, they're 2 years. And, boy, that is really kind of tough on you, particularly when you got to get out there and do fundraising and et cetera. But 435 seats, if you will, just enough number of African Americans and Latinos, if you will, to make it appear that some form of the doctrine of the Constitution of the United States and what the so-called founding fathers, all like that, come out at a place called Convention Hall, if you will, there in a city called Philadelphia. by the way, we have to always remind ourselves when we look at the Constitution of the United States that when they were talking about the rights that the new citizens and the breakaway from King Georgie and Great Britain, if you will, were all Caucasian, if you will. Every person of color that ever came to this country, be it the Asian slash Chinese and Japanese coming from the West, if you will, and the sons and daughters of the African across the Atlantic and et cetera, have always been referred to as some inferior people. And yet no appreciation or respect for the presence of the indigenous people of this continent. They are referred to as the American Indian. Of course, the reason is Columbus thought he was in India. So he made a declaration, and when he returned to Spain to report on his findings of of a new land and et cetera, he said he had found the passage. That was the exact word, the passage to India, and he had met the savages who were Indians, if you will. Well, you talk to any of the great Native American intellectuals, the indigenous people of this continent, if you will, they will tell you a different story. And by the way, I know what some of try to say in the anthropology departments of these white universities and et cetera, that there was no one. When these continents separated and were formed and settled in and all that, there were no people here whatsoever. There wasn't just anything here. There was maybe some prairie dogs, maybe some birds, but there weren't any human beings. And that actually these people who say that they are indigenous and native to this particular continent actually came from Siberia, came across the Bering Straits, came down through Alaska, went down to Alaska, down through Canada, if you will, the British Columbia and the Yukon, and into what is later Washington State and California, and continued a long journey, if you will, into a place later called South of America, if you will, into the Andes, into Peru and Ecuador, if you will, Bolivia, Chile, swinging over through the vast and beautiful and still pure at that time, we're talking 25,000, 30,000 years ago, jungles of the Amazon and et cetera, and Brazil and places like that, and Colombia, and Venezuela, Uruguay. And so we hear the fake story. You see, no one talks about the fake history of this nation, if you will, and those that have been in power really for far too long. You know, sometimes there, in the 1960s, there used to be some very revolutionary songs that were sung by some great artists, if you will. And they sung about the revolution. They sung about black folk really, truly breaking the bondages, if you will, of slavery and of oppression and et cetera. Some of the young folks need to maybe find them some old tapes, if you will, or whatever, you know, disc or et cetera, and listen to some of the old songs, Curtis Mayfield and others, and really listen to the words about a time is a coming, change is about to happen. I think many of us thought of my era that we were going to see that coming out of the 1960s, but, you know, as soon as the man put that dope in the community, compromised, quote-unquote, the dream, assassinated Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. and Medgar Evers and many others, if you will, of our great champions and et cetera. We lost our way. We lost the path. That was most unfortunate. But on the local scene here, to some associates and et cetera, and they were talking in terms that in this election of 2017, and I hope that the papers and others write about it, that we have the largest number of African Americans in the field running for mayor of the city of Minneapolis, if you will. And I said, you know, that is absolutely correct, because I can remember a time, and for our international audience and domestic audience, this commentator is 78 years of age, had been here in this city since 1945, so when I was six. So I've been here a long time. I've seen a lot of the great, quote-unquote, legends and principles and et cetera of the Minneapolis story, the name of my first book, if you will. But I've never seen this many African-Americans. I remember when the late Herrick Davis announced that he was going to run for mayor of the city of Minneapolis back in the late 60s. And I can remember so many of our own people saying, man, you can't do that, even though we were allegedly in God's country and allegedly white folks loved us, that you can't run for mayor. And Harry had some trepidation, if you will, about, you know, maybe not upsetting or creating a fundamental problem with his popularity. The fact of the matter is, when you as the sons and daughters of the African decide to take on the system and stand up, if you will, for the proudness and for the rights of the sons and daughters of the African, you know, don't get yourself confused that these folks necessarily love you and hey, think well of you, if you will. And so I was happy to see Alfred Flowers, longtime community activist, if you will, a man who has been fighting the battles for a long time. Maybe everyone doesn't agree with him, if you will, and et cetera. Of course, we don't agree on everything with anybody. Any of y'all who go to church every Sunday don't really totally agree with everything that the Bible says and the scriptures. If you did, you wouldn't be doing some of the things you do when you leave church, if you know what I mean. And so Mr. Flowers announced Monday, if I'm not mistaken, according to the news accounts, he announced his campaign and that he was a candidate to challenge for the office of mayor of the city of Minneapolis. And a couple people called and asked me about it, and I said, well, I've known Mr. Flowers for about 20 years, if you will. I know that he gets out there, he fights the battle, he speaks the word, if you will. Again, let's be clear, because, you know, we get into that player hating and et cetera, that maybe everything that Mr. Flowers says, not everybody agrees with it. But, you know, the reason we have elections and contests, and we certainly saw that as Donald Trump pulled fast one on Hillary Clinton. By the way, congratulations, Hillary Clinton finally kind of made an appearance last night at a gathering of the women in San Francisco. So it was good to see her. She had a beautiful black leather jacket she had on, a new hairstyle, and et cetera. Looked like maybe she had lost a tad of weight. But it was good to see her, began to join the battle. I was hoping that I would hear a little bit more from her with regards to the vicious attack, to the outright lies by Donald Trump as it pertains to the reputation and the legacy of the 44th president of the United States, Barack Obama. But she's not at that particular point right now. And we also have to keep in mind, though, that a lot of information is being suppressed. Let me give you a quick example. That's the way this program works, and then we're going to come back to the situation with Mr. Flowers. You know, an American aid worker and a Swedish aid worker were kidnapped, if you will, somewhere in the Congo over two weeks ago. And I went back and I had my research people take a look at newscasts and broadcasts and, tape and et cetera. And I saw no news announcement that an American and a Swedish citizen, both aid workers for the United Nations / the Red Cross, had disappeared. Well, they unfortunately, tragically, apparently early yesterday, found their bodies in a shallow grave, if you will. They had obviously been killed by militia in that part of Africa, if you will, that the so-called Congo, if you will, which I guess was supposed to rhyme with King Kong or something like that. But we never heard about it, just like we didn't hear much about the white Aryan terrorist who brutally, my friends, with a sword, actually used a sword. He wanted to inflict maximum pain upon a 64-year-old African-American gentleman there in New York City, if you will. There was the video of the white supremacist, tall, Caucasian, blonde, Nordic, that's always key. In fact, he looks like if he'd have been born 70 years before, he would have been an excellent member of any SS Waffen unit, if you will. I guess, again, we aren't supposed to talk about that. You know, we are not supposed to have enough sense as African-Americans to understand the history. But he was the blonde, blue-eyed Nordic and who viciously killed a black man on the streets of New York. And then, you know, he, as in the case of Dylann Roof, who murdered viciously white terrorists activity and et cetera, killed 9 black Christians while they sat in Bible, Carolina, at Mother Emanuel AME Church in that beloved city. And, you know, it just amazes me that when black folks' lives are taken by these white thugs, if you will, by these white terrorists and et cetera, whose mentor, if you will, resides right now at the right hand of President Donald Trump, Brandon. And it just fascinated me how this black man was just, and I do believe that his head was severed almost from his body as he was cut and stabbed repeatedly. A 64-year-old black man bothering no one. But what this Aryan Brotherhood, this neo-Nazi, this SS stormtrooper said is that I came all the way here from Baltimore to kill Negroes. He used the other term, if you will. But the fact of the matter is, investigators in Baltimore are now saying that they may very well be linking him to at least 7 or 8 murders in Baltimore over a period of time, and linking him now to similar pattern of murders in Texas, where he came from before he got to Baltimore. And so, going back to what we said about 2 minutes ago, there has been so much news, so much information that has been kept from us because people are just, quote-unquote, fascinated, if you will, with the Donald. They're fascinated with the, quote-unquote, Trump legacy, if you will. And yet so much is happening to the African-American, are suffering and are underfoot. White terrorist organizations, you know, killing squads, et cetera, are moving about and moving around, as the brothers like to say. And we're not even beginning to get the the past information on how many African Americans are both losing their lives on the streets of our city, not from black on black crime. See, that's a little game that gets played also, because you'd be surprised at how many cold case murders that we have in the United States of America that it was not a situation where it was black on black. That's for another program, and that's for a time when we have our phone lines open, because we have some brothers in a center in places like Missouri and Kansas, if you will, Atlanta, Los Angeles. We've had calls also from the Middle East, if you will, who have some very, enhanced observations about the numbers of African-Americans who die mysteriously on the streets of our city, and the number of African-Americans, particularly children, African-American children, males and females, and young African-American women who just kind of disappear. Now, that's not to say that there's not a significant number of young Caucasians, particularly Caucasian women, if you will, who disappear, but proportionally. And that man always wants to remind us that we are still a minority, which technically we're not. If we are part of the colored group, we are really not no longer a minority. We'll find that out when the next census comes out, you know. So while the getting is good, Mr. Brannon and his neo-Nazi buddies in the west and east wing of the White House will continue to put the plan together. By the way, heck of a conference in Washington today. The president had Governor Christie, who should have gone to jail with his aides earlier today, but he got away. He got away as it pertains to Bridgegate. Do it, Christie. You know, I know you folk out there in New Jersey just kind of shake your head on how, if you got the right contacts, the right relationships, and you got enough money, you spread it around, you can outrun anything, if you know what I mean. But Governor Christie, you know, his two associates, one male, one female, got 24 months and, what was it, 14 months or something like that. And, you know, there was just a lot of tears, and we're going to appeal, and et cetera. And I thought, well, if the money's right, you know, you get the right judge. I mean, you know, you can appeal and probably get your conviction reversed, if you will. Now, that takes us back to Alfred Flowers, because Mr. Flowers is the kind of candidate that will tell it like it is. And there used to be an African-American gentleman in this town. He's a friend of mine and still continues to be a friend, and he's in a nursing home now, and God bless him. His name was Richard Parker. And actually, he was the policy aide to then mayor, who is now deceased, back in the early 70s, if you will. And Richard Parker, and Bicky was a big brother too, so didn't nobody come up and try to punk Richard. In fact, he was a little bit taller than Mr. Flowers, if you will. But Richard Parker used to really upset the white folks and the handkerchief heads, Uncle Tom, when he would talk about, "I'm here to tell it like it is." I don't know how many of you even know about Richard Parker, of course, because of technology and et cetera. Now in our country, you can probably go to your computer and you can type in the name Richard Parker / Charles Stenvig, city government, 1970, if you will, 1974. And Richard actually was the second African-American / Negro, you know what I mean, that was put into a position of significant authority and power, you know, in the office of the mayor or anyplace else, following Josie Johnson, who actually became the first under the administration of the late Arthur Naftalin, a professor at the University of Minnesota, later became mayor of the city of Minneapolis. I can well remember when Josie was selected. She and her husband, Charles Johnson, at that time had arrived here from Tennessee by way of Texas, if you will. In fact, Josie had a very lovely daughter who was a correspondent for one of the networks, if you will, and tragically was killed in a very mysterious airplane crash that also killed a very popular and beloved our congressman from Houston, Texas, if you will. That's something else we'll talk about one of these days. Mickey Leland, if you will, plane just dropped out of the sky. Kind of reminded me when Ronald Brown died mysteriously in an airplane crash over Bosnia, if you will. Same kind of situation. This pilot got shot in the head. You know, I don't know if it's a pigeon that had a gun or, you know what I'm saying, plane crash. And Brother Ronald Brown, who was very close to the Democratic administrations and et cetera, perished in that particular crash. The reason I'm saying all that is saying that I have to understand that we do live in a nation in which there is not great value put on the lives, in this particular order. First of all, black folks of any persuasion, if you will, politically otherwise. And then, of course, black folks who are strong in the field of civil rights. And then within the Caucasian community, those that, as Senator Tower did, the little senator from Texas, I said, those of you again, go text it up, type it up. John Tower, he'd been talking a little bit too much out of school. They said he liked that Texas bourbon a little bit too much, and boom, his little plane crashed, if you will. This was about, 25, 30 years ago? So one understands that. So back to Alfred Flowers. As I said before, Mr. Flowers is the kind of candidate that, you know who he reminds me of in many respects, because folks used to make fun of him and talk about this gentleman and et cetera. But, man, the folks in Washington loved him right up to the day that he passed. And that was the gentleman who became mayor of Washington, D.C., if you will. Your brothers loved him. You know, he got messed up in some stuff with some light crack cocaine and et cetera. Sister set him up. But they loved him in Washington, D.C., and the black there felt that he would stand up for him and he would fight for him and et cetera. And so I've always looked at Mr. Flowers as the kind of candidate who will stand up for the mass, if you will, that he will speak out for a people of black, you know, red, you know, brown, yellow, who really need somebody to advocate for them, if you will, that Mr. Flowers will do that. Now, how well he will do in this campaign of 2017 is up to him and his supporters, if you will, his tacticians, his strategists, and et cetera. But he is in the race. And by the way, you know, we need to talk about some of you leaders of ours out there who did not want Mr. Flowers to run, making statements ranging from, you know, he doesn't have the refinement, if you will. That means he doesn't belong to the right clubs, like the Romeos and the Alphas and the Deltas and things like that. I mean, we just do it for real here on the Ron and Don program. You know what I mean? We need to do it, and you know, when my associate is with us and in studio, you know, we open a phone line, we encourage people to call and to fence with us back and forth. Let's talk about the issues, if you will. Now, this is election 2017. To be real clear, as we move into basically the last 17 minutes of tonight's program, there are a lot of needs as it pertains to those who are, quote-unquote, on the South 40 of the plantation. And you don't have to be just black, my white friends, to be on the South 40 of the plantation, because for those of you that read and do some studying, you know, they treated the poor white man just about as bad, quote-unquote, in the South, both before and after slavery. In fact, William Buford Hugh wrote a book talking in terms of I Was a Negro kind of thing. Book came out in the 1960s. And he asked a sharecropper, a white sharecropper in Alabama, if you will, down there in the Black Belt, to why he hated Negroes, if you will, because the white man was telling him about how much his father, this white man's father, hated a Negro because the Negro had a mule that lived longer than his daddy's mule, if you will. By the way, for those of you who know your history, you know, back in the days before the Emancipation Proclamation and for a period right up into the 1930s and etc. Having a mule, man, really made the difference in being able to plow your South 40 or your 10 acres, your 5 acres. We black folk are still waiting on our 40 acres and the mule. That's why people used to say back in the days, 1863, 1864, 1865, you know, that we allegedly, coming out of the Emancipation Proclamation and the creation of the Freedmen's Bureau and et cetera, there's something else for you to type up, my friends. The Freedmen's Bureau, you know, really the first social service agency that was created to deal with this newly created problem of the freed Negro, if you will. But people always talked in terms there was at least something there for the Negro, if you will. And, of course, out of that came Negro institutions of higher learning and et cetera. You know, Tuskegee and Howard, if you will, and Texas Southern, and Southern, if you will, and Grambling, and Mehara Medical School and Howard Medical School, and et cetera. And yet we don't seem to have made much progress beyond those that were the golden years for the emergence of the Negro. And so, in my estimation, we need in this race, in this mayoral race, we need an African-American who can bring us the facts and the truth, how well he's refined, whatever that means. I mean, you know, we just said a couple minutes ago what that really means. That means slick talking, you know, jiving, shucking, and not doing nothing for the masses. We think that Mr. Flowers matured during his run. Oh, we forgot to mention that, didn't we? Mr. Flowers ran for mayor 4 years ago. And, in fact, I heard some of the same tales and some of the same stories and snickers 4 years ago that we hear today, you know, that he's not refined enough, if you will. He had some problems with the police. Well, he settled those matters, as I understand it. And, in fact, there was a settlement, if you will. Nothing approaching what that brother got over there in St. Paul to Baker. Very happy for him, my friends. Better than $4 million, the largest settlement in the history of the city of St. Paul involving policemen's conduct. And a brother who was torn apart by a dog and being kicked 5 or 6 times by police officers, 6 officers standing there as the dog tore him apart. The man had to have 3 or 4 operations on his leg. But God dang me, the St. Paul City Council saw the righteousness of doing the right thing and awarded him $4 million, if you will. That is one of the highest figures. The other two were Dewey Know, the late Dewey Know, a great young officer, if you will, gunned down by some of his own colleagues who, interestingly enough, got the hell out of the Minneapolis Police Department and even got the hell out of the United States. In fact, one of them, the last time I heard, was over there in Bosnia, you know, killing brown-skinned Muslims. But of course, the other one was Sel Saron Scott. That's something else that y'all don't talk about because you don't know the history. Those two men, Baker in St. Paul, Dewey Know in Minneapolis, and Sel Saron Scott in Minneapolis, two in Minneapolis, one in St. Paul, all received a little over $4 million for what happened to them at the hands of authority, law enforcement that had broken the code and had treated a person in violation of the Constitution. Now, see, that's the kind of person that you want standing up for you in the office of mayor. As we said, this is the largest number of African-Americans ever to run for mayor in the city of Minneapolis, if you will. And, you know, it kind of surprised folks because they think we're such great liberals here that any Negro can, you know, go down to the clerk's office and register to run. No, that ain't true, man. We walked you all the way back to Harry Davis Sr. And Harry was president, by the way, just for a little history for you, was the president of the Urban Coalition. Urban Coalition at that time in the mid-1960s, very early 70s, was the favorite, the sweetheart of big corporate, big white corporate here in the Twin Cities, and et cetera. In fact, they also created a Urban Coalition in St. Paul, and In fact, we had so many organizations. We had two urban leagues, two urban coalitions, if you will, a number of other organizations. Now we're down to, and this is really kind of sad, we're down to really one, the Minneapolis Urban League, just kind of hanging on over there, if you will. We lost both our urban coalitions. We lost our urban league in St. Paul. Nobody likes to talk about that. What happened to all that money? We don't even have a museum, you know. We fought about 4 years ago that we were going to have a museum. And we're going to talk about the great things. In fact, on my television program to air here on Sunday, I talk in terms of a African-American journalist by the name of Scott. And he developed a publication, actually way back in the early 1950s, called the Minneapolis Beacon. And it was really a combination of kind of a history book, but a printed periodical, if you will. And Mr. Scott and another gentleman by the name of Smitty North. See, these are people that you folks that have come here and you downbeat us and et cetera, and you make it appear that your arrival was the first time that Negro had come into the Twin Cities and into Minnesota. In fact, we don't even talk in terms of the black enclaves in places like Fergus Falls, Brainerd, Minnesota. We sure don't talk about Duluth. And by the way, we're coming up on the anniversary of one of the most outrageous and most vicious crimes and lynching and murdering of black people in the history of the state of Minnesota. And I asked a couple people not too long ago, I said, do you think that maybe people should go up as part of a delegation and to Duluth at the memorial there? They have a memorial there right down the street from the big St. Louis County jail building where these young African Americans. Let me just give you the names. This is for this is for our friends, Clint, internationally, because there were three young African Americans hung here 100 years ago, almost, you know, in a place called Duluth, taken from the jail, hung on the light post right there in downtown Duluth. And we'll just repeat their names for those of you that have them computers, if you will, because they always seem to be forgotten. There was a memorial service for them in 2001. In fact, it was entitled Bringing the Truth to Light, if you will. Their names were Clayton, Jackson, and McGee. Yeah, Clayton, Jackson, and McGee. Three young African Americans, wrongly accused, if you will, drugged from the jail, though we have to say that the jailers at the St. Louis County Jail there in Duluth, Minnesota, did save another six African Americans. But these young men were taken. They were mutilated. Bodies were castigated, if you will. Their penises, vital organs were cut away from their body. The scene was horrible. There have been a couple books written about that murder, if you will, that lynching in Duluth, Minnesota, if you will, and the savage, we have to say, the savage murder of Clayton, Jackson, and McGee. And, you know, folks need to periodically remind themselves that these things, unfortunately, have happened, if you will. By the way, for those of you that maybe want to question and et cetera, if you contact the NBC station, Channel 6 in Duluth, they'll probably tell you about the anniversaries and et cetera. By the way, I happened to be with, back in 2000, and with the then mayor, still mayor of the city of Minneapolis, the Honorable Sharon Sells Belton, and we went up in a convoy, if you will. She was with her chief of security, a African-American police officer by the name of Charles Adams II, now commander in the Minneapolis Police Department. But I remember we went up, we attended a white church there, beautiful church overlooking Lake Superior, et cetera. We went to the proposed site of the memorial and et cetera, and it was beautiful. Bill Moppins and others there in Duluth, affiliated with University of Duluth, Minnesota, if you will, UMT, did a beautiful job and et cetera. But I told friends over the years, sometimes some remember, and they call me and they reach out and they ask what is happening, and I said, I think they still try to have a memorial and et cetera up there. It's a part of Minnesota history. In fact, what happened, there was so much carnage going on because there was at least 15 to 18 other Negroes killed, thrown into Lake Superior, et cetera. It took the governor of the state of Wisconsin to offer sanctuary, we use that word, the Negroes that were fleeing from Duluth across the bridges, the couple of bridges there, and coming out of Duluth and then going the land side, if you will, asking for safety and et cetera. The governor of Minnesota at that time, and this was really funny, the governor of Minnesota and during the time of that carnage, though he did send National Guard troops after the governor of Wisconsin said, man, they're killing and lynching your Negroes in Duluth, was J.A.A. Burnquist. And what was always fascinating to me as a historian, as we move into the last couple of minutes of tonight's program, is that J.A.A. Burnquist, white governor of the state of Minnesota, if you will, was also the president of the St. Paul NAACP. And he was really embarrassed as the governor of the NAACP of St. Paul that this kind of carnage had taken place in his beloved state of Minnesota, if you will. And it's, again, it's a piece of the history. Now, the reason I say all that is because a candidate like Al Flowers Jr., or Al Flowers, I'm sorry, son of the Jr., that Al Flowers would talk about that and be able to connect lines and dots and et cetera, because part of the problem that had emerged in Duluth in the last couple of minutes of tonight's program was that people had fired up the white population who had just returned from the First World War to believe that Negroes, and the largest employer in Duluth, by the way, was United States Steel. They employed probably 9,000 to 10,000 people. Duluth at that time actually was up around 109,000. Population dropped very sharply. In fact, over 4,000 Negroes fled Duluth, never to really return until just in the last 10 years, if you will. But white veterans who had been returning from the First World War were convinced that the Negroes had taken their jobs. And yet many of these young Negroes working in the steel mills of 1920 and 21 were veterans just like the white doughboys, if you will. And many young Negroes could not understand this was all about. There have been a couple of books written, as we said before, but it's all a part of history. And this entire program, in the 88 seconds we have left, is about the truth, fake news, and the importance of honest information. And we think in some regards that the announced candidate, Alfred Flowers, may bring that to the mayoral contest at a crucial time in the future of the city of Minneapolis. Again, we thank you for listening to us and to tuning in to the Ron and Don program, coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, the metropolitan area in the state of Minnesota. God bless you, Black Minnesota. God bless you, Black America. And God bless Barack Obama, who is not a man that committed treason or committed an act that would require him to be charged with a felony. He has only done that which is justice and goodness for the United States of America. We'll be back with you next week. Again, I'm Ron Edwards. This is the Ron and Don program. Good evening.